Welcome to the Disney Magic Podcast. I'm Joel.
And I'm Megan.
And we're going to talk about some Disney things. We're going to talk about The Great Mouse Detective.
Yeah, we are.
Which is the Sherlock Holmes movie.
Basically,
pretty much. Yeah. Great Mouse Detective is the 26th animated feature and was released in 1986, July 2nd. And was released after The Black Cauldron, which is, makes it another one of those movies that saved the company.
Again.
Yep. I think this has to be the last time, since we're so close to the Renaissance.
Would Tangled count?
I'm trying to think of,
like, what happened after, like, you know, Treasure Planet, Atlantis, that, oh, well, Lilo and Stitch did well.
Yeah.
So maybe
I don't remember what the exact order is.
I think we're out of bankruptcy range at this point. Maybe out of like save the animation studio section, because you know after this they own everything in the world, so it doesn't really matter. Yeah.
Well, that's the interesting thing is, you know, it didn't exactly save the company, but it saved the animation department. It kind of convinced them that they still could do stuff with this animation department, which is really weird to think about now that Disney was for a while being like, we don't need to do animation. Let's do grown-up movies. Let's do Splash. And what's really interesting about this movie that I found was that, you know, it's based on these books, this book series called Basil of Baker Street, mm-hmm. which is about a mouse who, you know, lives in the baseboards of Sherlock Holmes's house. But they forced the company, the executives forced the name change to be The Great Mouse Detective. And they hated this fact. And it really reminds me of the Rapunzel to Tangled stuff.
God, that I hate that.
Happened recently.
I hate that. Well, and I hate the Snow Queen to Frozen crap too. Can't have girl names and titles, Joel.
I mean, I understand on a purely executive point where they went from that. It's interesting after they did such a big job of really promoting the Disney Princess lineup.
To
drop it to, you know, be like, well, We've neglected this entire other gender.
Oh, right, let's boys.
Try and get them back. And, you know, I can really understand it with Basil of Baker Street because, you know, if you don't know what Baker Street is, which I wouldn't have the first time I saw this movie.
No, I saw it when I was about 4, I think, the first time. So, yeah, I wouldn't have connected.
I would have been like, well, I can understand that you might need a little help being like, oh, this movie's about a mouse detective.
Yeah.
But the people who worked on the movie did not care for this.
No.
And there's a kind of fake memo that someone made during all this name change stuff. One of the animators sent around, which was basically saying that now they're changing all the movie titles.
Oh, and yeah, I've seen look forward, that.
Yeah, it's like, now look forward to Disney re-releasing Seven Little Men, Help a Girl. And Disney releasing The Girl with the See-Through Shoes.
I would watch that movie.
And it's really entertaining to go through it because there's like very clear ones. And then there's ones where I'm reading, I'm like, I wonder what movie that was supposed to be. Because the last one on there is The Evil Bonehead. I'm like, what is that? And I'm like, that's The Horned King.
That is The Horned King. I think that movie would have been even better if it was called The Evil Bonehead.
I think that's why we almost lost Disney Animation.
Yep.
It was because nobody would name a movie The Evil Bonehead.
I would watch that.
But it's interesting, yeah, with such recent things happening where there was anger about name changes.
Yeah.
That it was also, but you know, there was no internet back then, so the general public didn't know that they were doing that.
It's true. Yep.
But yeah, it is the Basil of Baker Street stories. It's about a mouse named Basil living on Vega Street. Like, they don't change anything about it, but except for the title. Which actually they changed a couple of times because the film was originally came out as The Great Mouse Detective, and then when they re-released it, they gave it the title The Adventures of the Great Mouse Detective. And then they released it on video and named it The Great Mouse Detective. But in the movie, the title card still says The Adventures of the Great Mouse Detective.
Yeah, that's odd. I feel like that decision was weird in the first place because that just makes that title so long.
It does.
So unnecessary.
And a lot of the, like, it really kind of flumbles around in your mouth.
Yeah. The Great Mouse Detective sounds good. I like that title. Yes.
That's what I've always called it. Struck me odd. And I guess I've always seen it, the title card at least, saying The Adventures of, because I never saw it in theaters.
I don't know. I guess I just ignored the first half of it. Oh, well.
It said Great Mouse Detective on the cover of the VHS.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. But anyway, let's jump into the movie.
Okay. So, it starts out with Mr. Flavisham?
Yes.
He doesn't have a first... Nobody calls him by a name in this movie, actually. Well, okay, Radigan calls him Flavisham, but, you know, he obviously has a first name and probably some sort of title. Like, Mr. or Sir.
Yeah, I think he had a first name in the credits. Okay. It was like Hiram or something.
Oh, well then.
But, yeah,
they never mentioned
it.
So... It starts with Mr. Flavisham.
Yes.
And Olivia, who is adorable. Because, like, sometimes in these sorts of movies, you get this, like, one kid with all these adults, and they're, like, obnoxious, and you hate them. But Olivia's really sweet, and I actually really like her a lot. But it's Olivia's birthday, and it's the best birthday ever, but we don't get to see why it's the best birthday ever. She's just, like, sitting around. He owns a toy shop, He's like
a toy maker.
Yeah. And then he's like, well, I've got a surprise. And he brings out this little ballerina. And it's a little mechanical ballerina. And you wind it up. And it dances. It's a
really complex toy. I was really impressed.
It's super complex. I don't think that could happen in real life. But as a kid, this is my favorite part.
Especially because this movie is like 1887 or something.
Yeah.
So I don't think they had the mechanics back then to be able to rock that kind
of... Well, there was a lot of really interesting clockworks stuff that was made. Like, I remember reading about, like, different automatons and stuff that people made that could, like, play instruments and that sort of thing. But just, like, the way this toy, like, balances does not make any sense. So...
It's very fluid, and especially for, like, the machinery he makes later...
Yeah.
In the movie that's really haphazard contraptions.
Yes.
Like, this is a quality top-shelf toy that he's made for his child.
So, then there's this, like, large knock at the door, and he tells Olivia to hide, so she does. And then this bat comes in.
This is a scary face bat.
Oh my god, this scared me so bad as a child. I cannot even explain to you.
So, the thing is, he
pops through the window, and he's just, his face is scary.
His face covers up, like, the entire screen, he comes out of nowhere, and this happens a couple times throughout this movie. Yes,
because there's the one where he's in the cradle.
He's in the cradle. Yeah, so, and, I mean, I jumped this time around, I was like, whoa, oh man.
I remembered it happening, so I was okay, but, like, I remember as a child, that was terrifying. So he's this peg-legged bat, and he's got a broken wing, and a little hat, and a sweater. He looks like a pirate bat. His name is Fidget.
I really like him. I think he's my favorite character in this movie.
I love his little angry voice. I think it's so funny.
He's just very grumbly.
He's just not the brightest crayon in the box. He's just so funny. When he's not being terrifying.
Yes. But he kidnaps, the father, who, by the way, the father, is voiced by Alan Young, who is Scrooge McDuck.
Oh.
So yeah, that's why he has that Scottish accent.
That's
like
cool.
That like hint of one.
Yeah, it's not a super strong one.
Like, I mean, Scrooge has a really thick lay on top Scottish accent, but this guy still has like a hint of it. So
yeah.
I sit there going the whole time, going, "Oh, I wonder who that is."
Who's that? Yeah, that's cool.
And Fidget is voiced by the same guy who was the alligator in Robin Hood.
That makes sense to me. But was also in Sleeping Beauty. Was he the little ogre dude in Sleeping Beauty? The little goblin.
I think so. He's one that Disney used. Forever. Several times throughout there. Yeah, he was one of the goons in Sleeping Beauty, and I think he was the Indian chief in Peter Pan.
Yeah, okay.
But there's...
He's got a very recognizable voice.
Yeah, there's a mouse later on, the one that's yelling at the octopus,
mm-hmm.
and he yells something along the lines of, like, "Get off the stage, eight-legged bum!"
Yeah.
And he uses, like, his exact crocodile voice. For voicing that one line for that character.
Awesome.
And so that's when I noticed. I was like, oh wait.
It's that
I have to
dude.
Go look that up. Now.
So yeah, gets kidnapped, and then we get this awesome score. I love the score to this movie. And this was one of like two movies I had on VHS as a child. And so I watched it all the time. So I remember this opening and I remember this song really, really well, and I really like it.
So this is over.
There's a little bit of opening credits, which I was kind of surprised about, because we totally stopped opening credits last movie, which is weird. I mean it wasn't full, it was just like voice credits and
stuff.
It was
title and voice credits. Vincent Price got top billing,
famous.
I guess makes sense because he's super famous, but, you know, he's the bad guy.
I love that it was Vincent Price, though.
I love that it was Vincent Price, and apparently Vincent Price loves that it was Vincent Price because it was like a lifelong dream of his to be in a Disney movie.
That's so cool. That's so really awesome. Cool.
But he does a really good job in this movie because it doesn't, I mean, Vincent Price doesn't have an overly distinguishable voice.
Yeah,
but
I mean, sometimes he does though. Like, he narrated a Tim Burton short about, it was called Vincent.
It was called Vincent,
to be Vincent Price. And, like, you can really tell it's him in that. But he did a really good job in this movie not sounding fully like himself.
Yeah. That short is what I use to think of his voice.
Me too.
Because it's a lot of his voice. But very much, he didn't know, even knowing it was him now, he was not distracting at all.
No.
Of being like, oh, that's Vincent Price
Which
talking.
Is like, that's the worst thing about animated movies where like famous people do them. If you can immediately tell that it's them, and then it bothers you the whole movie because then you just keep picturing them in your head. Oh, that drives me crazy. So he did a really good job. I was very pleased.
He did. So we get, we're introduced to
Dobson.
We're introduced to the Watson Mouse.
Watson Mouse.
Yeah, Dawson. Who has been in Afghanistan, which is really cool.
It is cool.
I did not remember that actual Watson was in Afghanistan.
Yeah.
So when I've seen like the modern adaptations, when they're like, oh, he was in Afghanistan, I'm like, well, I wonder where he really was. And then I went back and read the books. I was like, oh. He was actually in Afghanistan.
They didn't
Look
even
at
have
that.
To do anything to that. yes, and he finds this section has his narration to it.
Yes.
And then he finds Olivia in a boot, and she's crying, and it's raining. And it's like, what I don't understand is this is like a perfectly good boot. I don't know why it's sitting in like an alleyway abandoned.
I don't know.
Poor boot. So she's looking for Basil of Baker Street. Dawson is originally looking for just like a roommate. He's got like the mom and dad's being like, I gotta go find some place to live now.
It's raining.
And so he says he will help her find this dude.
Yes.
The thing that bothered me most about this scene was that he hands her a handkerchief and he says, dry your eyes, and she blows her nose. Okay, I know you're like 7, but these two things are entirely separate processes, and it should not be that hard to distinguish.
She's just gotta clean everything off.
But she doesn't even wipe her eyes. She just blows her nose. That drives me nuts.
Poor Dawson might not have wanted snot on his handkerchief, so he was very specific about your eyes, only your eyes, please.
No.
I'm like, oh.
No.
She's just going to ignore you.
So they find the house, and I love that that Basil has a little half sign by his 21.
Yeah, the
or whatever, yeah.
21. I like that. I like that you can see Sherlock in the window.
There's a couple of shots that are really awesome of, like, clearly, like, Sherlock there. And
yeah.
Yeah. Or, like, his stuff. We'll talk about his house later, because they go through his house, but it's just really funny.
I really like all that stuff.
It's really cute. And it's stuff that, like, you know, small children might not catch, but it's nice for adults to be like, oh, I see that thing that you did there. Yeah.
Yep. So they go to the house, and we're introduced to the Basil character.
Well, we're introduced to the Mrs. Hudson character first.
Well, yeah, okay, yeah.
Her name is Mrs. Johnson in this one, and she's very cute. And she keeps bacon cheese crumpets, and I remember every time I watch this movie, I'm like, what's some cheese crumpets? That sounds delicious.
She is so frazzled in this movie.
I think I would be too.
Understandably frazzled. I agree.
So, Basil, like, bursts through the door in this really racist accent. And, like...
He does.
It's, like, this... Supposed to be this Chinese mouse, but, like, his eyes are looking opposite direction, and he's got this ridiculous mustache and this tiny hat. It's bad.
It's very interesting because there's no real context as to why... He's in this. There's no reason.
No.
And previous racist depictions in Disney have all had some sort of context where it'd be like, oh, let's take one of each nationality and do the extremes. Or, you know, something about that nationality that was caricatured at the time.
Yeah.
But this one was just like somebody in Disney's like, I drew a funny looking mouse.
This is just racism for racism's sake, essentially, which is weird. But he doesn't stay in that for long, thank God. That's not, like, plot point worthy or anything. But no. It is really offensive. So, he, like, rushes in, and, like all Sherlock Holmes adaptations, he's just like, dudes, leave me alone. I don't care who you are. I don't care why you're in my house. I just have things to do.
Every Sherlock adaptation, my favorite part is always the intro to Sherlock. Yes. Just to, like, show how awesome a detective he is right away.
Yep.
And at the same time, how eccentric he is.
Yes.
So they do that really well.
He does some stuff with all his contraptions. He's got this, like, giant lab set up in his living room, basically, which I always loved because it, like, most of the time when he uses it, it makes, like, no scientific sense, but it looks really cool. And he's, basically what he's doing is he's checking for, like, ballistics on a bullet.
Yeah, he's trying to match a bullet. Yeah.
But he hands Dawson some pillows. And he tries to shoot the pillows, and Dawson's like, oh, well then. He, like, shoves the pillows down in a chair. And he, like, does all this stuff. And then...
Yeah, he shoots the pillows, gets the bullet ready, and then starts trying to line up all the
lines.
But they don't match.
And then he is sad, so it's violin time, because it's how Sherlock Holmes works. And he finally starts listening to them. Like, this whole time, Dawson and Olivia have been trying to be like, hey, I need, could you help with the stuff and the things? And he finally listens to the story. And there's this sad little point where she's like, my father's lost. And he's like, oh, well, certainly your mother could do something about it. And she's like, I don't have a mother. And she's just so tiny and Scottish and sad. And he feels so bad about it. He makes this face like, oh, I just said that, didn't I? Oh.
Yep. He really, like, gets into the story when she mentions fidget.
Yeah.
And then he's like, oh, that's Rattigan.
Yeah.
On the trail. And I really like that he has a picture of Rattigan
hanging
above his mantle.
That is so funny. And it's like a really nice dashing portrait of him, too.
It is. I don't know where Rattigan had that made and why it's in Sherlock's possession now.
I don't know.
But it's really like to have your arch nemesis to be just like chilling out up there.
So funny. So then we get introduced like properly to Rattigan. And
who is forcing Olivia's father to make some kind of machine that we don't really know what's going on yet.
Yeah.
And through all this, he reveals part of his scheme. It's not fully revealed. But we know that it involves the queen.
And her diamond jubilee.
Yes. And probably something to do with this crazy machine that makes tea.
Yes. That's about it.
He sends Fidget out for stuff. And I really like that he gives him a list. And the first item on the list is just tools.
Gears, costumes.
The girl. And
uniforms. And girl, yeah.
Yep.
Which is funny. And then we get a little song.
Yes.
With his minions. I love this song.
I love this song, but this isn't a villain song. It's such a, happy chorus song.
The song sounds happy, but I noticed a line in the song that I didn't catch as a child.
I know!
And it is the worst line ever! Because the whole song is just, in praise of this dude and how evil he is. But, it doesn't really directly address what evil things he's done. He stole some crown jewels, and you can see those. And, one or two other things. But specifically, this line is, "Even meaner, you mean it. Worse than the widows and orphans you drowned." I was like, what? Disney! This movie is not child appropriate. And I just didn't even catch it as a kid, because they sing kind of slurred, first of all, because they're all drunk, which is also not child appropriate. This is the least kid appropriate Disney movie I would say that I've watched thus far.
We'll get to it specifically in the bar scene, but
but there's so much drinking. There's tons of smoking. Cigars are everywhere in this movie. And and Basil smokes his pipe the whole time, obviously. It's so full of debauchery. It's so funny. That's my favorite line.
I know, right?
You drowned. Yep.
That's the thing. It's like I had to rewind and rewatch this part because I'm sure I misheard that line.
No, you didn't. But that is what it says.
Song wise and musically wise, it's a joyful song. It's a song of celebration. Yeah. And especially when you compare it to other Disney villain songs, like Hellfire and Be Prepared.
Where they're all I am going to kill all of the people. He's just gonna be the ruler of everything. It's gonna be awesome. We're gonna have a party.
It's so upbeat compared to these dark toned songs.
Yep.
Which is nice because there's not a lot of singing in this movie.
No.
So when they do, I'm really glad that they sing something so jovial. Then the extra drunk mouse, whose name is Bartholomew, accidentally calls him a rat.
And this is apparently a very big problem with Rattigan. His name is Rattigan, note. He's definitely a rat. He's twice the size of all of the other animals in this movie. And he's got, a standard rat tail, a fancy rat tail. So he's clearly a rat, and this is clearly a problem for him, and he likes to think that he's a mouse. I don't know what that's trying to say about animal racial tensions.
I don't know, that's the thing, is there's no backstory where he decided mice were better than rats or anything.
There's no other rats. Pretty much all we see are mice and the occasional other animal that's not even a rodent, a lizard or whatever.
Yeah, there is a lizard who is totally the lizard with the ladder. Bill the lizard.
From Alice in Wonderland. He's got the same hat and everything. Yeah.
I don't know what happened to Bill's life to make him go so bad and try and overthrow all of Mouthdom.
Maybe he was evil in the first place. I mean, we didn't get to see the rest of Bill's story. Maybe he's just not a very nice lizard. He was on his way to help Radigan by bringing these tools.
But we felt so sorry for him back in Wonderland.
Well, now we don't feel so sorry for him, do we?
We don't.
Oh. But yeah, the little really drunk mouse gets even more drunk and calls him a rat. Yeah. And so we discovered that the punishment for doing pretty much anything wrong is getting eaten. Which yes. is also very disturbing. So there's this cat that Radigan has under his control. I don't know how that works. I guess he I'm just assuming feeds her regularly.
He constantly feeds her so she yeah. knows not to eat Radigan.
And you can tell because she's a giant, giant cat.
Yes.
And like, you know,
people must displease Radigan all the time.
I know.
Because this is the fattest of cats.
It's huge. Her name is Felicia. Well, he calls her Felicia. Her name is Felicia. But yeah. I just love the way he pronounces it. Because
Felicia.
Awesome. He is Felicia. And so he feeds the mouse to her, which is nice. And, like, the thing is that, like, he gives these people, his other, like, henchmen, like, 5 seconds to mourn. They, like, take off their hats and cry, and then he's like, okay, song time again, let's go! Everybody's singing, which is really, really...
And they yeah. go right back into jovialness, and they juggle,
yep.
and it's my, just my such other, madcap fun.
My other favorite line from this song, and I don't know if I misheard this, but I'm pretty sure at some point they said, you're even more evil than you. Like, what? That doesn't make any sense. But it's so funny. And then we pan back to the portrait of Radigan.
I really like it.
On his mantle.
Yes.
Like a weirdo. That's so weird.
Because we're back with Basil, who's getting ready to go out questing.
Yeah. And I love that this little scene starts the Basil being really bad at names thing. He got Dawson right away,
yes.
but he cannot get Flavisham at all. He calls her Flamhammer this time.
Yeah.
And then he sits on his violin.
I really like this.
Because he's like grumpy.
He does sit on his violin. Yeah. I was so sad for the violin.
I love that at first he tried to blame it on her, and then he's like, wait, no, that's my butt. I totally did that. Like, you were making me grumpy, but that was my bad. He's trying to tell Olivia not to come with them, and that's what they're arguing about.
Yes.
Like, well, whatever.
Olivia wants to come.
So, they're going to see Toby.
But it's really nice that he does say not one word out of you, and she doesn't talk.
That's
for, like,
true.
This entire thing.
It's true.
So throughout all of this and all of the toy shop scene, she doesn't talk. So I was like, well, at least she listened this time.
And she's not, like, super she gets distracted, but in a way that any kid would get distracted, so it's more their fault that she yes. gets distracted. But okay, so they go to visit Toby, who's
yes.
upstairs.
Who is Sherlock's dog,
he's
I guess.
So cute. He'd be John's dog, I guess, right? I don't think Sherlock could take care of an animal.
I looked it up. Sherlock, in one of the stories, borrows a dog named Toby.
Oh.
I couldn't find where he borrowed it from, but I feel like the implication in this movie is that he never gave him back.
Which is awful.
Which is awful and a very Sherlock thing to do.
I don't remember him having a dog in any of the stories.
I don't either.
But I do know in like the most recent movie adaptations, Jude Law Watson has a dog that
yeah
that so Robert Downey Jr. keeps trying to like kill. So I don't know. I assume
there could totally
I assume
be
that
yeah.
it is John's, if only because I could not picture Sherlock having the foresight to take care of an animal. I don't think that would happen.
Well, this is the scene. So they're in Sherlock's house,
yes.
and we get a very brief moment of Sherlock and Watson talking.
Yes,
with
about
their silhouettes.
Some case.
Yes. So this, I really love this scene because, you know, really hardcore Sherlock fans have really
yeah.
like taken apart this scene. It is Basil Rathbone speaking.
Oh,
there.
Really? Oh,
it
that's
is,
awesome.
But it's not taken from his, you know, it would be assumed that it was taken from when he played Sherlock. on like on the films, but that was in the 1940s. And it's actually the recording is edited from Basil Rathbone reading the Sherlock story, The Adventure of the Red-Headed League, which he read in 1966, which is why he sounds older in this movie than he does in the 1940s stuff.
That's so cool. I love nerds who figure that crap out.
And it's why Nigel Bruce, who played Watson in the Rathbone stuff, is not playing Watson in this movie. But to make it the most insanely nerdiest thing of all times, that particular story, there's enough spoken about the case that they could figure out it was that particular story, which specifically took place in 1890, which is not when the actual Queen Victoria Diamond Jubilee took place, which we can see happening in the background later in this movie. So there's a time error here because of that, which is the most, like, mind-blowingly specific thing to figure out.
That's so funny. Oh.
And I just love that there's these Sherlock fans that are so dedicated.
So hardcore.
That they could figure that out from this, like, tiny snippet.
It's, like, literally a 3-second conversation. That's so amazing. My favorite part about this scene was that in all of Sherlock's stuff, a bust of himself and several portraits are included. He literally has a bust of himself in his apartment. Like, you guys, that's a little egotistical. And of course, there's, like, tons of books and magnifying glasses and stuff. Very, very Sherlock Holmes
lots,
stuff.
Lots of Sherlock stuff. But yeah,
it was a full bust with a hat and everything.
Very nice. I'd have one of those.
If you were that iconic, you have a bust of yourself.
I don't know if you can be iconic while you're still
alive.
Existing.
I
yeah.
I don't know. Maybe. I would say so for certain people, but it's rare. So good luck with that.
But they summon Toby.
Toby is so cute.
He's a giant, really cooperative dog.
He's like a beagle or some sort of hound dog. He's really cute.
Yeah.
And I love that Olivia feeds him a crumpet, and that crumpet would taste like half of a crumb to him, because his dog is so big in comparison.
But I love that, like, that earns his undying loyalty for Olivia.
It's true. He loves her so much better than he loves Basil automatically for food. That's so funny. And so like a dog.
Yep.
So Sherlock takes this, or Basil takes this hat that he has, that they found of fidgets.
Of fidgets, yeah.
And he's telling Toby to sniff it, and then he's describing the animal, but he's not saying it's a bat. So he gets to like broken wing, and Toby makes this like, what, face? And he's like, oh, he's a piglet back with a broken wing. And Toby's like, oh, of course. He goes, like, straight back to serious face, which is really funny.
It is. It's a very cute bit.
Oh, and then Flamchester. It's the next last name.
Yes.
I wrote down all the last names because I thought they were really funny.
But so they get the scent, and then they're off. And I really like how they're off and, like, leaving Dawson and Olivia to, like, run after them.
Yep. And Olivia manages to get on Toby, but Dawson pretty much just ends up on the tail.
Every scene from this point forward where they're riding Toby, Dawson is clinging to the tail, just barely hanging on.
Dawson's not very good at riding dogs.
Which I really like. But it leads them to a toy store.
Another toy store. A real people-sized...
Which is a people toy store.
Yes.
With the scariest toys in the world. This is the toy store of horror.
Toy store from hell. No, it's super scary. And, like, some of them are kind of cute and would be cute under other contexts, but because it's, like, dark and creepy.
It's dark, and they're all really small, which makes the lighting on the toys, you know, from their angle, super scary.
Yeah.
And, oh, it was terrifying.
So scary.
And so they're exploring the toy store looking for Fidget. And Olivia starts wandering off.
A little band toy. A little wind-up band toy. That looks kind of like the one that was in Pinocchio.
There's a lot of little wind-up Pinocchio-looking toys in this toy store.
But this one in particular reminded me of it, because the little, I think it was a trumpet player, his little cheeks puff out with the mechanism, which I thought was cute. But yeah. So
she sets it off.
And we get a glimpse of Fidget stealing uniforms.
Right.
From toy soldiers.
Which are very, like, Royal Guard uniforms with the tall hats the red cloaks.
Yeah.
There's also a point where they walk across a chessboard, and Basil moves a piece and declares checkmate. And I spent way too much time rewinding and pausing this movie to try and determine if he actually did put anything in checkmate there.
Did he?
He didn't, but it's very close.
Close enough for Disney, whatever.
And so, to the fact that I'm sure nobody was ever supposed to do that, I'm pretty impressed. And it's really difficult. I think the pieces might have moved during the cut.
Yeah.
I'm not 100% sure. But Black is definitely within one piece of checkmate after that move, except I'm not sure that Basil did anything to help.
That's true. That's funny. They're like exploring the toy shop, and then Olivia gets distracted because there's bubbles. Like, Fidget starts turning on all the toys, so they start, like, making noise and stuff, and one of them starts blowing bubbles. It's actually a Dumbo. She passes
it. It is a Dumbo.
It's a really cute toy. You're like,
hey, look at that, it's Dumbo.
Hey, I kind of want a little Dumbo that when you wind it up, he blows bubbles. That sounds really nice. That sounds really cute. She sees this little baby cradle that's, like, rocking back and forth, and she goes to look in the cradle, and there's Scary Bat Face
again. And this is the second time the bat scares you.
Scary. I did not like that as a kid.
We get this whole kind of chase sequence.
Yeah.
Where Dawson and Basil are chasing after Fidget, and he's using the toys to chase him and distract him.
With a lance, and it almost kills them. Like, toys are very dangerous to mice, and I never really thought about it. But I guess they must be.
Yeah. I really like they had this little round-the-world toy.
Yeah.
Where, you know, you turn the scrolls and the little picture changes. And so they were trying to run away, but they were caught on this treadmill of a toy.
And then there's this, like, giant doll that crashes down on them. And, it's very scary.
And it results with Fidget getting away.
He sings a little song as he leaves. It's a really stupid song, but it makes me laugh.
I really like Fidget. This is where I decided that Fidget was my favorite.
It doesn't even rhyme. It's just like, I got the gears, I got the girl, I got the something. Ha ha ha. I'm like, Fidget, that is not a song.
this part, and right after this, when he brings Olivia back to Radigan, and Fidget and she kicks him in the leg, and he goes, "Oh, my only good foot."
Yep.
So he gets
away with her, and they have a fight. Or Dawson and Basil get in this fight about whose fault it is.
Since Dawson has found the list, that means that they have a lead, and so it's back to Baker Street.
Yes. And then we get Fidget and Olivia back at Radigan headquarters.
Yes.
Puts her in a bottle.
Radigan basically makes sure that Olivia's father knows that he now has her as hostage, and make sure to work on your machine contraption, really successfully.
Okay, the weirdest thing about this scene to me was that he goes to pull out his list, and he has a pocket in his wing. That is not, like, an item of clothing. That is a piece of, like, flesh. And it's weird that he would have a pocket in his wing.
See, I figured maybe that's why he has a broken wing, because, like, we don't clearly see any broken wing like we do the peg leg.
We just
leg.
Know that he can't fly very well. He kind of spazzes around.
Maybe that's because he has a pocket.
Maybe. I don't know. That seems so weird. And so he drops the list, and Radigan gets really mad at him because, you know... Oh, and he tells him that Basil is following them.
Yes.
And Radigan freaks out and tries to feed him to Felicia, but it doesn't really work.
Which is bad, because Bartholomew was my favorite, and then he got fed, and so I decided that Fidget was my new favorite, and then he about died too, get eaten by the same cat.
But he's okay, don't worry.
He is. He doesn't go down very easily.
No.
He has this whole little, you know, fight with this cat to not get eaten, which I really liked. And Radigan has this idea to basically set a trap for Basil, since he knows that Basil is on his trail.
Yeah. So, then we get the discussion of the paper and more ridiculous experiments. So, he first of all decides that the paper is Mongolian. And I was like, really? That's some ridiculously imported paper there, Radigan. And he talks about the ink and basically figures out that, you know, he's in the sewer. He knows he's in the sewer. But he figures out that it should be where the river meets the ocean. No, the river meets the sewer,
and it has to be a seedy bar because of the brand of alcohol that has tainted the paper.
Yes.
And there's lots of crazy made up chemistry that's really awesome.
So ridiculous and cool. I think those are my favorite sequences in this movie, other than the bar scene. I just love the bar scene. Are the scenes where he's doing ridiculous experiments and everything changes color and goes through a bunch of twirly tubes, because that's how science works in animated movies.
Yes.
That's
how you make a Frankenstein monster. That's the one that always, boggled me, is because I'm like, you don't pour liquid on a body to make it come back. But you always see Frankenstein with his tubes, you know, pouring liquids and stuff and measuring out things in beakers.
So they decide to go to this bar.
Yes. And they have to do it in costume.
This is the most ridiculous scene in a Disney movie, I think, hands down. Like, the most ridiculous, child-inappropriate scene in a Disney movie ever. So what happens is they go to this bar, and they have to get dressed up. So Basil's wearing this trench coat and a little fake mustache. I love his fake mustache. He basically dresses up Dawson as Mr. Smee. He's got the little striped belly shirt and stuff, and it's so fun. Well, he also has an eye patch.
He does have an eye patch,
which he keeps lifting up to see stuff, so it doesn't really serve its purpose.
It doesn't convey effective eye patch use.
No.
But they go to the seedy bar, and this is the one where you're like, there is so much drinking and smoking.
Everybody is drinking. There are, there's a scene where in the beginning where the barmaid punches the guy who whistles at her. there's knife throwing, there's guns.
Lots of guns.
Just brandishing guns aimlessly, not even doing anything with them, just leering at other people and brandishing weapons.
And in the middle of all of this, there's this extended song where this scantily clad lady mouse comes out on stage to get wolf whistled at, and basically this... You know, the kind of thing you see in over-the-top rated R Mel Brooks parodies.
I mean, it's basically a burlesque show in the middle of this children's movie, which is so funny. She's not like a stripper, because she's still wearing clothes, but she's wearing initially she's wearing a nice little skirt and a shirt and a little shawl, and then she's wearing she takes all this stuff off, and she's wearing this, essentially, a backless leotard with a little fluffy boa skirt and a garter and some high heels.
The thing that it really reminded me of is the musical Gypsy, which is about Gypsy Rose Lee, yeah. but is still PG or G, so she only strips so much.
Yeah.
And so it really reminded me of that.
That's where funny.
It's like, and you know, and some other lady mice come on and dance
the
with her.
Can-can dancers. And the song is, like, ridiculously suggestive. She keeps talking about, like, well, the song itself is called Let Me Be Good to You, first of all. And she keeps saying, like, that, like, she would do things for these seedy bar dudes. And, like, they never say anything explicit, but, like, there's a whole lot of implication in those lyrics.
And the thing is, you know, this is not a new movie now, but it's 1986. So it's not one of these old movies back when, you know, we had the Pecos Bill shooting guns for everything to shave and to move through the water and everything.
No.
You know,
it's recent enough that this should have been problematic for people. Know,
nowadays, smoking is a thing that is strongly used to determine the ratings of a movie.
Right.
And are almost automatic R, if not automatic PG-13.
Yeah.
And so it's, you know,
movie
very.
Would have been rated R, basically, which is so funny.
It's recent enough that you're like, really? Okay.
This is a thing that happened. So they order drinks, they order pints.
Yes.
And they drug the pints because they ask about Radigan.
Yes.
But I don't understand what sort of drugs they were using.
With the safest, most inefficient drug in the history of mankind.
I mean, it's basically like they drugged the alcohol with more alcohol. Like, it looks like they made them like an Irish car bomb or something.
That's the thing is,
Dawson drinks it before he knows that it's drugged. And Faz is like, it's drugged, and he's just more drunk. Like,
and the drugs make you want to dance for like 3 minutes, and then Dawson's okay again.
I don't understand what these drugs are.
And the thing is, mice are highly susceptible to poison.
They are.
Like, so it has to be the most, you know, it's probably some heavy apple juice or something.
Hard apple cider. Like, it's like a teaspoon of a Smirnoff ice. I don't understand what these drugs are. Oh, it's so funny. This whole scene, I was just laughing so hard because it's just so, so ridiculous.
This is such a ridiculous scene.
But it's my favorite scene. And it was as a kid. I loved this song as a kid. And I loved
the mouse's good.
Fancy little outfit. And I'm like, Megan, small Megan, what was this?
But plot point wise, they notice Fidget in the bar and follow him down a secret passageway.
Yep.
To Radigan's hideout.
Yes.
Basically.
And they find the lair, and they think they find Olivia, but then it turns over, and again, bat face of anger and creepiness.
It doesn't fill up so much of the screen this time, but it is kind of an unpleasant thing.
Because
we're like,
he's
oh, wait a
like
minute.
Olivia.
That's not Olivia at all. And they roll out this surprise banner, and Radigan comes out with this, haha, I beat you. Spiel.
Yep.
That Basil is really easy to break in this scene because Radigan kind of just points and laughs at him, and Basil goes into this state of total defeat.
Yep, it's true. He has this elaborate Rube Goldberg machine set up to kill them. He can't just like kill them like normal people. He has to like set up this trap that has. There's a crossbow, which I'm not really sure how that would work on a mouse, but okay.
It starts with a mouse trap, but then goes to a gun, a crossbow, an axe, and then finally
an anvil
to squish the whole thing.
Yep. And they have Olivia set up so she can watch this, which is nice. So they go off in their little uniforms, and they're setting their trap.
And they mentioned they're going to Buckingham Palace.
Yes.
And
they're bringing this big box with them.
Yes.
And, like,
so
the weird thing about this is that he puts on a record, and when the record stops, the whole machine's supposed to start. But I noticed that that's definitely Vincent Price singing. So essentially what they're implying is that Radigan is vain enough to set up his trap with himself singing a song on record.
No, they said that in the movie. Radigan says, here's a song I recorded for you to say goodbye.
That's so funny. It's like this little goodbye so long song.
And this is the only song I remembered from watching this movie as a kid.
Yeah.
Because it just struck me how difficult it must be to record a song, especially way back then.
Yeah, that's true. Like,
all the material that Radigan would need to have access to, and it's a full-sized record player. It's not like a mouse-sized record player. It's giant, human people-sized.
Yeah.
And so he needs to have access to human-sized recording material to record a human-sized vinyl album.
You were a very thoughtful child.
It really struck me as odd.
That's funny.
That to be so difficult to just to record this song, and then he talked over the song, and they didn't play part of the song because we followed it. And I really wanted to hear the rest of this song. So it does play over the credits. So yes. I didn't know that until this time, so I was really excited to hear the rest of this song.
They cut back to Buckingham Palace, and the little mouse queen's thing is like at Buckingham Palace. That's adorable.
Little mouse Buckingham Palace is in the floorboards of real Buckingham Palace,
which is so cute. And she, her guards come in and they're like, oh, you got a present.
Yes. The queen is very clearly Queen Victoria.
She's adorable.
They don't ever call her by name or give her a name other than the queen.
No.
And she doesn't wear black. No. But other than that, she's very clearly Queen Victoria.
Yes. Maybe she's Queen Victoria if Albert had lived as a mouse. Maybe Mouse Albert's still alive.
Why didn't he come to her rescue then?
I don't know.
What's going on, Mouse Albert?
I mean, with everybody else in this movie, chances are he's drunk. So.
Probably
with
so.
With everybody else being drunk, might as well join the party. So she opens the box and it's this automaton queen.
Yes.
And then, it like tries to kill her. Which is really funny, because like how weird of an obituary would that be? Like, and then the queen died. She was attacked and killed by a robot version of herself. Like what?
Well, you know, the plan is clearly to kill the queen. Like,
yeah.
They tie her up and Fidget's responsible for bringing her to the cat who's waiting outside.
I love that she kicks him in the head.
I do like that. I love Fidget. Throughout this whole thing, he's having such a difficult time dragging this queen mouse.
He's just trying to be good at being evil, and he's really not.
No, he's not.
But then it cuts back to Basil and Dawson, who are all tied up. And Basil is just, Basil's the biggest drama queen. And he's
given up.
Dead to the world. And Dawson, like, yells at him. And he says, if you're not going to do anything about it, why don't we just set it off now? And then Basil's like, obviously, that is the perfect plan. And then he talks his way through this before he does it. And he basically says, multiplied by the square root of an isosceles triangle.
He basically does the verbal version of all the chemistry stuff that he did before. It makes no sense, but he's using words like projector and average radius and vertex, and so it all sounds very smart.
And so it gets set off, and they release the trap, which catches the ball that was supposed to.
The trap catches on the ball, so it doesn't snap their necks.
Right,
and the strain of the trap pings off a piece of it, which knocks the gun askew. So the gun shoots the crossbow, and the crossbow shoots the axe,
and the axe falls between them. And
freeing them so that when the anvil falls, it crushes nobody.
Yes.
And I love the rapid change, because Basil has been in sailor uniform throughout all this, and then rapid changes into Sherlock uniform in time for the picture to be taken.
Yep. And the only thing that I thought was really not believable about this scene, which is so stupid because, like, none of this makes sense, but the one thing that I was like, really? Was the bottle. Because the bottle that Olivia's in just, like, spontaneously opens itself, basically. And I was like...
I'm assuming something and all that trap stuff hits it. But yeah, it does kind of, like, pachwong!
Open, by the way!
All by itself.
So that was
so, I mean, at worst comes to worst, everybody's free now. They could have just freed her from the bottle.
I mean, at the very least, multiplied by the square root of an isosceles triangle.
Megan, if you'd only do that, you'd know exactly how that bottle opened.
Oh, I'm sorry. I haven't been doing it right enough. Thanks.
Square roots.
I'm not very good at math.
Factor divisions.
And angles of matriculation. Yes.
Yes, that's what opens bottles.
Obviously.
How do you open bottles? With your hands? Like a boring person?
With a corkscrew. So yeah, everybody's freed and they take a happy picture. And then it cuts back to the queen.
Well, they call Toby because they're on their way to Buckingham Palace. And I love that Toby folds his ear so that it'll become stairs for efficient boarding of Toby.
It's so adorable. Oh, I love Toby. I also don't really understand why any of the large animals don't talk in this movie. Toby doesn't talk, and Felicia doesn't talk. Which is weird.
I don't know.
Maybe communication is based on... Well, no, it can't be based on, like genus or whatever, because it'd be... Because the lizard can totally talk with them. I don't understand.
Maybe it's a size thing. I don't know.
No. So they're on their way.
Meanwhile, back at Buckingham Palace, the robot queen has been introduced as the queen.
Would that really fool anyone? Like, the voice is similar, but she clearly is, like, really jerky in her movements.
I mean, yeah, she's very shaky, but I don't know how well mice know about automatons in 1887.
And maybe they're just not very close to the queen. I don't think the queen has a lot of personal friends at Diamond Jubilee things that she would be giving a speech to. I don't know.
I mean, it has to look weird if they believe that's the queen later on when the queen starts falling apart. It has to be very strange.
Yep. But, So she
introduces Radigan.
Yes.
As her new royal advisor.
Radigan's got this awesome outfit that's covered in unnecessary medals and crap. It's awesome.
I do like the medals that he clearly didn't earn.
He looks so awesome.
He has some new ideas.
Yes.
He's got the list.
And then we cut away to see Basil and Dawson and Olivia saving the queen.
Yeah, they save the queen in the nick of time. Toby chases after Felicia.
Yes.
And so everybody's tied up, and Basil gets to take control of the queen. And there's this silly little fight scene where Radigan's trying to make the queen be quiet because Basil's now making her say mean things about him.
Yep.
And he starts pulling her apart. And this has to be the most distressing thing for that small rat mouse child in the audience to be seeing.
Oh, that poor rat mouse child.
Radigan pulling his queen apart. And her not being like, ow, you're pulling me apart, but continuing to insult him.
And then Radigan gets a hold of Olivia, and there's this chase scene. And
it turns into this aerial chase scene with balloons and
Radigan previously had this like airship thing. But in order to compensate for their lack of airship, Dawson and Basil built this thing out of the Union Jack, a bunch of balloons, and a matchbox. Yeah. Which a matchbox seems too small to carry like three mice, by the way, but whatever. Maybe they're very small mice.
Maybe it's a very big matchbox.
It's a very large. I mean, with the amount of cigars that people smoke in this movie, they need a very large matchbox.
Take chase.
Yes.
And I love that they steer by letting the air out of balloons.
Yes. Oh, and Toby chases Felicia onto a wall that she jumps over, being all like haughty, like, aha, I have gotten away from you. And she jumps into the queen's guard dogs. every other is like a sign. So I'm like, you just got attacked by a bunch of corgis, cat.
And we never see her again.
No. So yes, there's this chase scene, and it's Ariel, and they end up crashing into Big Ben.
Yes. And so there's this whole scene where they're inside Big Ben, and there's lots of gears and clockwork. Yes. And this is the first time that a major movie has used computer animation was to animate these clock gears.
And they're really nice looking. I was very impressed. Yeah. Because, like, a lot of times when you watch those scenes, you go back and watch those, like, CG scenes that they put into, like, 2D animated movies, you're like, well, that's really obvious, but this is
the first time, huh?
That's like, in Aladdin, the scene where he's leaving the cave on the carpet, it's like, oh, yeah, that was definitely, like, 92, wasn't it? but this, for some reason, the way they did it looked really, really nice, and I think it's just because the shapes are so basic.
Yeah, it's pretty simple, it's very slow-moving, and it's all kind of on a dark background.
Right, but it looks really nice, this is very impressive.
Yeah, it is.
But there's this big, big fight between Basil and Radigan, and Olivia's, like, caught between them and stuff. And then
I was a little worried about Olivia right there. Like, those gears got really close to crushing her. And so Radigan's cape gets caught, and so he pulls it out and tears his stuff. And there's this really cool kind of very gradual transformation across this scene where Radigan really starts to look like a rat.
Yeah.
And the thing is, throughout most of this movie, you know, these mice are very anthropomorphized. It's, you know, they have only human characteristics, other than the fact that they eat cheese crumpets. That's like the only, you know, mouse trait that they have. And especially, you know, the scantily clad lady mice, who don't look anything like mouse anatomy. They're clearly humans with mice face.
Lady anatomy.
And especially, you know, Basil is just a person who has a mouse head.
Yeah.
But Radigan really starts to, like, look like a rat and move like a rat around these things, which is really cool.
This scene really reminded me of Beauty and the Beast, where there's, like, direct differences between the Beast when he's being human and the Beast when he's angry. He gets really hunched up and his fur stands on end and stuff like that. And it really, really reminded me of that, especially when they were, like, silhouetted on the clock. That, like, sort of silhouette to him looked a lot like the Beast to me.
This was, like, a serious fight scene.
Yeah, it was a really intense fight scene.
Very dramatic and stressful, and people were falling off things.
So what happens is they end up on the hands of Big Ben, and Radigan pushes Basil off, and he, like, thinks he's won, and
Radigan is hanging on to the crashed wreckage of Radigan's airship.
Yes. And then
they jumps them, and there's this thing where they both fall into the abyss.
Yeah.
And, you know, not to spoil real Sherlock Holmes, but it's really old. It really does mirror the way that Sherlock died for a while.
Yeah.
When he fought Moriarty. But then, you know, in true Sherlock fashion, he does come back.
Yeah, it's this little flying contraption that's essentially, like, a little pair of, like, pedals and some sort of stick
propeller thing.
And a propeller. I don't know, it's very funny. But yes, he's okay. And then it goes to the end, and they're all back at Basil's place, and everybody's okay. And
it's time for goodbyes.
They're saying goodbye, and Basil says goodbye to Miss Flangerhanger, which is awesome. He's so bad at names. And there's this moment that there always is in first Sherlock Holmes movies, where, or like books or whatever you're telling, where the Watson character goes to leave, and Holmes is trying to be like, "Be my living life partner. Where are we gonna be friends forever now? I thought you were." And then, like, a new case comes in. He's like, "Oh, by the way, this is my compatriot."
And I really like how happy they both are while this lady is very distressed.
I know.
6 inches away.
So awkward for that lady. And they're just
like smiling and be like, "Yeah,
buds forever.
We're so cool, singing our theme song."
So that was really awkward. And then it pans out to the outside, and Toby's like sitting at the window, which is really cute.
Waiting to be used.
Yep. So that's the great mass detective.
It was good.
I like this one a lot. And
this movie is like a special kind of ridiculous, which is really great about it.
I'm stupidly biased towards this movie because I really, really love it, and it's one that a lot of people really haven't seen, which is a shame because it is somehow so much better being older. I guess the full repercussions of stripper mice and tons of alcohol are more fully realized as an adult, but it's just so funny.
That plus all the Sherlock love that's in this movie. I think Basil was a great Sherlock.
He was great.
You know, a lot of the modernized versions of Sherlock show Sherlock as really like socially awkward and kind of cruel, and not unfairly so, because that's, you know, kind of how he is.
Yeah.
But Basil has like real compassion.
This one, he seemed a lot more aware of himself than a lot of Sherlock adaptations I've seen. I loved. Dawson is not my ideal Watson. Like he's a little dumpy and silly, but like I loved how much he cared about people, and I loved what a contrast he was to Basil. And I think they worked really well together.
I really loved that he helped.
Yeah,
like so often Watson useful. Just sits there dumbstruck and being like, "Wow, Sherlock's so cool.
This stuff is so cool, you guys."
And he's got a hat and he's really, really smart.
He does thinking and things.
And so I like that he found, like, he is properly amazed by Sherlock's or by Basil's ability to think, but he finds the list, you know, he helps out. And it really is makes sense that Sherlock would want him to hang around
because
later
he's been so
to
useful.
Actually help out and not to be like, record my exploits.
Or like, pay attention to me all of the time.
Which is what Sherlock sometimes does.
I loved Radigan. I thought he was a really awesome, awesome villain. I loved his song.
He's one of my favorites. I really like the songs. It's really interesting that all the songs are bad guy songs.
They are.
And, you know, the lady mice, I guess she's not a bad guy, but she's there to entertain the bad guys.
Yeah.
And she doesn't help the good guys at all. So I can happily classify that as a bad guy song. So, yeah, all the songs here are for the bad guys to sing.
I really enjoyed all of the debauchery.
There is so much debauchery in this movie.
It's like a frat party movie. Like, what?
And so it's kind of silly that this is the one that was so successful to save the children's department at Disney.
Yay!
But I'm glad it did.
Me too. Oh, I really like this one. I strongly recommend it if you have not seen it before.
Yes, it is. It is one of those ones that kind of gets swept under the underrated, especially because it's so close to the Renaissance period movies. It kind of ends up being the one before that doesn't really get the recognition that I think it sometimes merits.
Yes.
So that's The Great Mouse Detective.
Yeah.
Next week will be Oliver and Company, which I'm excited for.
I haven't seen that movie in so long. I've heard a lot of the songs fairly recently.
I saw that. That movie, like, is really short.
It's very short.
And the reason I know that is because I saw it fairly recently at this summer camp I was working at for kids. And it was a rainy day. And rainy days are the worst thing to happen to summer camps.
It's true.
Because it means all the kids are inside, and inside echoes and is loud and is terrible.
Yep.
And so I thought, we need to put on a movie. The parents will be here in 2 hours. Just put on a movie,
Oliver
and it'll be done.
Not gonna
and
last
I chose Oliver and Company.
No.
And it did not. It lasted half the time it needed to last. So the next time I was like, "Have you guys seen Gone with the Wind? I think we should show these kids that."
Have you seen the entire Lord of the Rings trilogy, the extended editions? Yeah, we're gonna watch that.
So next week will be Oliver and Company.
Hooray.
Until then, bye guys.
Bye everybody. Bye so soon. Time now.